Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome to an hour of mind power, and we have got a topic that I don't know if you're a card player, for those of you that are listening. I'm not real big into playing card games. When I was a kid, that was something I was very interested in. But as an adult, I haven't done a lot of it. But I'll tell you what, I have discovered something, or should I say it was given to me, and I'll call it a discovery. When I was in New York City back in the fall, and I met a man, Stephen Shapiro, who said, Donna, I've got something nobody else has got, and he's right. And what is it? It's poker. No. Not like the poker games that you see on television. This is personality poker. That's right. So we're going to have a lot of fun, and I think you'll enjoy it. And by the way, if you're looking for a gift for someone that you just can't figure out what to give them, this is something that we wouldn't expect in a million years, and they'd have a good time with it. Stephen Shapiro, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Donna. It's great to be here.
Well, when I met you in New York, I was absolutely mesmerized with your concept of personality poker. Now, you're the former leader of Accenture's 20,000-person process excellence practice. You'll have to tell us a little bit about that. But you really are in the innovation, and what a wonderful thing to be involved in this time. It's something we really need in the United States. We need to get back on track becoming a leader in the area of innovation. You talk to people around the world. You have been an advisor to many of the Fortune 500 companies, including Staples, GE, Johnson & Johnson, and the list goes on. Stephen, tell us first about Accenture's 20,000-person process excellence. Tell us about that.
Well, this is something that was born out of some work I did in the early 90s. Back then, the concept of business process reengineering was really popular, and the whole idea was to make companies more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I discovered sort of in the mid-90s was that this whole movement was actually used as an excuse for downsizing, and so I realized that a lot of my work that I was doing resulted in a lot of people losing their jobs, and I had a bit of a existential meltdown, I guess you could say, and I realized I didn't want to do that anymore. So what I looked at was, what did I want to do? And I realized I wanted to help companies grow and for people to be able to keep their jobs and create more jobs. And that's why in 1996, we created this practice from scratch around, even though it's called process excellence, a big cornerstone of it was innovation and growth. And we grew it to a nice large practice. And on the back of that, I got my first book deal, which is how basically I led to where I am today.
Well, this is such an interesting, innovative way of working with people. Now, I could see the application on multiple levels, but let's take the business application. First of all, personality poker. Are you a poker player? Is this something you enjoy doing?
I'm actually more of a blackjack player than a poker player, because with blackjack, you don't have to worry about bluffing. It's pure mathematics. Poker actually takes a lot more strategy and understanding of human dynamics. And so I tend to be better at the mathematical side than the human equation of poker. But I enjoy all card games. I like all kinds of games.
What gave you the aha for this personality poker deck?
Well, I developed years ago, about 12, 13 years ago, basically just a very simple spreadsheet that allowed me to quickly assess what role somebody would play in the innovation process. And and from my perspective, innovation is not synonymous with creativity, but rather it's about solving particular problems. And there's four steps in the innovation process, starting with defining the problem or challenge. And what I found was that there are different people who are good at different steps. So, for example, the extremely analytical people are very good at defining the challenges, whereas the creative people are very good at generating solutions. And so there's four steps, four styles. And it was about 4 years ago, I think, when I was in Las Vegas actually playing blackjack at the Venetian, where I got the idea to take the words that were in my spreadsheet, put them on poker cards, and start playing around with that. And we went through many different iterations and tests and partnerings with universities to refine the words, and basically ended up with what we just came out with last month.
Well, I was really fascinated with it. Then I found that it offered so many different dynamics. I think when you're giving a presentation, even if you just had people come up and just pull a card and you were asking, what's your feeling about this? How do you respond to this kind of a word? I think it'd be very, very intriguing. But you have developed this because you wanted businesses to be able to take the people they've got, help them to understand how each person has their strengths and their weaknesses. And that's what's fascinating about poker, the personality poker game, is that when you've done this with large groups, by the way, what's the largest group you've ever done this with?
We did it with 1,000 people once at Disney World, which was quite an interesting process, yes.
Whoa! How many days did it take you to do it?
it doesn't matter the size. It's 90 minutes. We can spend more time, mm-hmm. but we were able to get through the whole thing in 90 minutes because it's actually a trading process that people go through. So the number of people is not as important as how deep we want to get into the analysis.
Oh, that's 1,000 people. Anyway, to be able to show people how they can work together and how innovation can be so very important. We have such a critical situation in this country at this time. We're in a dramatic cycle of change. Innovation is so very important, but you need to have the practical side. And so many people have gone through what you mentioned right at the beginning. Well, the only way we're going to make it is by downsizing. Instead of thinking outside the box, saying, okay, we have these challenges. How do we keep the people that we have had that are wonderful workers? What do we do so that we can switch, change, adapt, and then move forward? This has been, this is just an incredible tool. It could work with families, though, too. I mean, this is what I like, the diversification that this can be utilized with. When you've done this and you are working with a team of people, and maybe the company, and you mention a story in your book about a company that when you did the test, you found that because you have the four suits, you have the spades, the diamonds, the clubs, and the hearts. So you have these four suits, and you found in the company, it was I think about 200 employees, that it was divided evenly. 25% were spades, 25 were diamonds, 25 were clubs, 25% were hearts. Yet none of these departments, none of these persons with their talents were communicating with each other. This company was in hot water because that wasn't the case. How did working with the game make a difference?
Well, here's a natural tendency. I mean, it's like we've been told, and I think most people believe that opposites attract. So, you know, we go through life with this assumption, but in fact, in the workplace in particular, but even personal lives, which I could talk about later, you know, opposites repel. And so I don't think anybody in the organization actually knew about or thought much about the different styles that were there. But what they got to see very quickly is that it was human behavior, human natural tendency to want to work with people who think like us. And so if I'm working on a problem and I'm a person who makes decisions based on the way other people feel, I'm probably going to seek out other people who make decisions the same way, who's going to really, you know, who's going to understand me. I mean, if you think about the people in your life, we try to surround ourselves with people who get us, people who think like us. And it's that dynamic that keeps organizations running efficiently because you have a whole bunch of yes men and yes women working together, but it's also the thing which prevents innovation. And they quickly realized mm-hmm. that they needed to bring in some level of creative tension. People who are very, very emotional-driven need to partner with the people who are hard-nosed, numbers-driven people because that's the only way they're really going to start making better decisions.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And, in fact, you brought up yourself. You said you really like being on the creative edge and you hate crunching numbers, so you need somebody that you said that was going to stand nose-to-nose with you and tell you when you didn't have the facts straight. Am I correct?
absolutely. In fact, I always say the person you like the least is probably the person you need the most, because the people who annoy us are often of a different style. They have different motivations. And so people who are very, very, you know, rigorous and so driven by goals are the antithesis of who I am. My natural tendency is to want to hang around with free-spirited, free-wheeling people, but the problem is when I do that, we have a great time, but we get nothing done.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to seek out the people who, you know, are different than me. People are going to force me to do what I don't necessarily want to do, and that's the only reason why I can become successful.
It tickles me when you say that, because I think of my husband, who is typically always late for everything. And he said, don't blame me for being late. You come along and I won't be. It's like having that person that's right there. No. This is what we've got to go. And I'm using that as a silly example, but I think it's sort of similar to what you're saying. You have to have someone. If you are in business, or let's say you're a student and you have a tendency to procrastinate and you just don't want to get things done, you need to have someone, maybe a teacher or someone else, to say, excuse me, you're being flunked. You have 2 hours to get this done. Otherwise, you're out of here. Now make a choice. There are things where we have to have that to stimulate us. If we were all self-inclined to be motivated in the right way to do the right things at all times, well, that would be great, but we're not clones, and we're not drones either. So we have to be able to have those areas of diversity in our life. And you said getting people into the right role. When we're playing poker personality, give us a good example of how you enabled someone to see how they were in the wrong positioning and what they could do to get into the right positioning within an organization or even in a personal life situation.
Well, there's quite a few examples of this. I'll give you one which I thought was sort of fascinating. Is we were playing personality poker with a whole bunch of people from a city in Texas. And it was the city manager, so the guy who ran the city, and a bunch of other people that worked with him. And one of the things that we do, what's great, and for people who don't know how personality poker works, is it's 52 poker cards that have words written across the face of the cards, and those words describe particular attributes, styles. And we will trade the cards, and the main objective is to get 5 cards where the words best describe how you see yourself. But in a lot of cases, we will also go through the process, when people work together, of gifting cards. So you will actually get cards from other people, so you very quickly get to see how other people see you. And in this one event that we were doing in Texas, it was a small group, 20 people, the city manager chose 5 hearts for himself. So a person who really likes people, very emotional, and from the minute I met him, I knew he was a very loyal, great listener, empathetic, compassionate kind of person. What was interesting, though, is when we did the trading process and the gifting process, every person gave him clubs, and the clubs are the very methodical, planning-oriented types of people. And so we looked at this, and what we quickly realized was, as the city manager, he learned to become a good manager. And there's a difference between doing what you're good at, doing what you do frequently, and what you really get energized by. And what he realized is he's energized by human relationships. He's good at planning and good at managing, and he does them a lot, but it drains him. So we started to look at shifting responsibilities, finding somebody who's a club who really likes to do that rigorous, methodical work, and have the city manager really start to focus on relationships. And you just see people lighten up instantly, and it changes their dynamic and changes their jobs.
Well, I think it's fabulous, and I could see where within families or a teacher could use this in a classroom. I mean, there's just so many different applications that this can be utilized with. We're talking, my guest today is Stephen Shapiro. This is so unique, Personality Poker. Now, Stephen, in your book that comes along with a deck of cards, and I just randomly drew some out, in the spades there was the know-it-all, diamonds, creative, clubs, competitive, in the hearts it was loyal. And again, these words are all printed on the cards. And you have some interesting aspects that you say people can do. Someone could do this by themselves. Tell us how they could use these 52 cards to gain an insight into themselves. What would they do if they wanted to do it privately? Let's say they didn't have anybody handy to do this with.
The easiest way to do it is a version of solitaire, and essentially what you do is you create three piles. And the first pile would be words that truly describe who you are. And again, it's not just, you know, what you're good at, but really the words that describe who you are when you're at your best and you get energized. The second pile would be the words that absolutely positively do not describe you. So, for example, with me, the first pile would be things such as creative and adventurous and spontaneous, whereas the second pile would be organized. I mean, if you saw my desk, you would know that's the absolute opposite of me. And then the third pile are just, you know, things that are sometimes like you, sometimes not like you. And you go through a process to make sure there aren't too many cards in any one of the piles. So you only want like 7, 8, or 9 in the first two piles. And that will give you a good sense. And here's what I think is always most interesting for people, is to actually skip the first pile, the words that describe who you are. Go to the second pile, the words that describe who you aren't. These really give people some pretty fascinating insights, because this gives you a sense of who you need to partner with. Because if this is who you aren't, it's who you need. And so I'm actually quite often less concerned with who you are personality-wise, but who you aren't personality-wise.
All right. Now let's take the four card sections, the spades. If someone really got a lot of spades for themselves, what kind of personality is that? Let's just sort of break that down. And of course, none of us are just one component. We're very diversified as individuals, but let's just take them in categories. Spades, what do they represent personality style-wise?
Well, the spades are the very analytical, data-driven, smart people. I mean, so if you look at researchers, professors, statisticians, you know, anybody who likes to, you know, be driven by facts, I always sort of joke, like, if you like, you know, spreadsheets, you're probably a bit of a spade. And, you know, these are the people who also can be a little skeptical at times, and that they're, you know, they want to be proven. They want proof on things, mathematical, scientific proof. But this is sort of the domain of spades, very smart, analytical people.
And you categorize them as high and low. What made you come up with that?
Well, what we found is that there's actually a range of personalities within each of the different styles. And so what we did with the numbers, there's 13 cards, 2 through ace. And what we did was on the 2, 3s, and 4s of each suit, we put the what I call the unproductive behaviors, the unproductive byproducts of your strong suit. So, for example, with a spade, you know, being smart is a great thing, and being very analytical is a great thing, but becoming a know-it-all or becoming skeptical or cynical, well, that sometimes is less productive. So the 2, 3, 4s are extremely useful because they give us a better insight into our personality in many cases. We know who we are when we're at our worst, but we're not always sure who we are when we're at our best, because we're very adaptable and mold into different situations. So those are the 2, 3, 4s. The 5 through 9s represent what psychologists would call the introverted styles. It's not the way we think of introversion. This is not about shyness or even social skills. This really has to do with your desire for stimuli and ambiguity. And so the 5 through 9s are people who prefer to, you know, work in more structured environments. They don't necessarily like as many people. They don't like as much stimuli. Whereas the 10 through aces would be more extroverted, and that they like lots of stimuli, and they like a little more ambiguity, and they tend to be out there and trying different types of things all the time. So the numbers, the colors, mm-hmm. and the suits all have meaning.
Ah, there you go. Clubs. Let's go into their definition.
So the clubs, two types of clubs. The 5 through 9 of clubs are the great planners. The thing that all clubs have in common is they like to plan the work and work the plan. But the 5 through 9 clubs in particular are the ones who are really methodical, systematic. They like to, you know, really just get things totally organized. So for them, it's the process. It's the way we're going to get the work done. How are we going to get it done? Whereas the 10 through ace of clubs are much more into actions. In many cases, they don't care how it gets done as long as it does get done. Typical CEOs fall into the 10 through ace of clubs category because they're very goal-oriented and about the bottom line.
All right, and so then we are going with the diamonds.
The diamonds are the thing that all diamonds share in common is novelty. They like newness. The 5 through 9 of diamonds are the people who like new ideas. So like the spades, they think a lot, But the difference is the spades tend to think about numbers, data, and facts, whereas the 5 through 9 of diamonds tend to think more about creative ideas. So when we think of somebody who's creative, the stereotypical creative person, that's a 5 through 9 of diamonds. The 10 through 8 of diamonds are the people who are into new experiences. So it's not so much about thinking about things, but it's actually doing new and different things, traveling a lot.
Mm-hmm. And then the last suit are the hearts.
The 5 through 9 of hearts are the great therapists. So if all your friends call you up with all their issues and their problems, the odds are you're probably a bit of a 5 through 9 of hearts, because they're great listeners, compassionate, loyal, empathetic. Whereas the 10 through 8 of hearts also like people, but they're the social butterflies. I always say that they know a lot of people, they just don't know anyone particularly well, because they're the master networkers. They're great at making connections between people.
Mm-hmm. And again, you have the high and the low. Now, in doing this, you have also, you have different games that you have put through here. And of course, you say, having a happy workplace, if someone's in business, now, I would think that doing this, and I know you go into different businesses and you set this up, this would be extremely interesting to employees, and it would really, I think, be useful to employers. You gave an earlier example of a CEO and how he found that he was able to delegate more. He was doing more of what he really loved to do. When you go through this, the employees, after this is done and they're interacting with the employers, have you seen really significant changes within the industry that you've done this with? And I know you've done this with so many.
Well, you know, significance is a relative term. I think what we find is that it makes instantaneous and sustainable impact, which over time has significant impact. Because all we're really trying to do is stimulate conversation, conversations that typically wouldn't take place. And what I find is that if you think about most personality tests that are out there, most of them are some kind of written exam or something that you do on a computer. You, as the test taker, know how you answered your questions. Nobody else knows. And then you get a spit out, you get a report of some numbers, colors, letters, whatever it might be, and that's the topic of conversation. With personality poker, what's really fascinating is you get to see the cards people chose and have a conversation about it. And so the biggest impact is, first of all, you change the way you see other people. You have deep conversations with people on topics you probably have never had a conversation about. And you will begin to proactively seek out people that you might have normally avoided because you now actually have a deeper appreciation for them. And we've seen in situations where it has increased their ability to innovate. We've seen situations where it's diffused conflict, which has existed in the past. So it's a wide range of different things. It also, in some cases, explains to companies why their organization is not able to grow, because they have too much homogeneity in their style, and that diversity necessary for breakthrough thinking doesn't exist. So we see lots of different impacts that it makes on an organization.
Well, I think it's fabulous. Let's talk about some of the games that you have come up with, because you have a chapter on enhancing creativity, or a section just on that, for all of the suits that are here in the deck. And I really think some of these games are just absolutely wonderful. What about the one with solitaire? You see, it's a full year of solitaire. Let's talk about that.
Well, this is just a very simple one because there's 52 weeks in a year, 52 cards in a deck. And so what you do is each week, you can do it on Monday, Sunday, doesn't matter, choose one of the cards and use that card as a mantra, a theme for how you're going to run that week. So if, for example, I'm a pretty creative, experiential, disorganized person. If I happen to choose the organized card that week, I'd say, great, I'm playing the game of being organized. And I would spend that week really trying to take care of things that I might not have been taking care of. And this allows me to, over the course of a year, actually experience every single different style and maybe begin to appreciate those styles, but it will also, in my personal life, allow me to become more effective.
How would you handle the one that says anal retentive?
Well, that one would be tough. I'd probably have to hire somebody for that. That's the
there is a card with that on it, so I had to ask that question.
Three of clubs. That is everybody's favorite card. That and the bossy card are the bossy cards, the most frequently gifted cards in the corporate environment.
I couldn't pass that one up. Well, I know that you have another one here, and you also talk about, that one, but there really is a science behind this that you have worked on putting together. You went into a little detail with that. How do you see this growing for yourself?
Let me address it in a couple ways, because I do want to talk about the science, because a lot of people, when they see this, you know, it's sort of a fun-looking game, and it actually is a game, and people laugh. I mean, it's like, seriously, when we play this, the laughter, you know, you'd think you're in a comedy club or something, and it's nothing I'm doing. It's people trading cards and making fun of each other and appreciating each other and having conversations they wouldn't have. It's hilarious. And so I wanted to make sure that what we were doing here was something that was actually going to be valuable and valid. So I called a guy who's a professor of psychology and in particular specializes in tests of this sort. He's at Columbia College, and we spoke, and I explained my sort of dilemma. He's like, I know it works, but, you know, is it valid? And one of the things he said to me was very interesting. He says, there's a big difference between being valid and being useful. He said, most personality tests, most testing in general, strives to be scientifically valid in the laboratory, but they've yet been able to convert it over to practicality in the real world. He said, so let's, you know, we want it to be valid to some degree, but let's focus on usefulness. Does it give us the results that we want? And he gave a very simple example. He said that, you know, the psychologists have been trying to develop the most valid test for determining whether somebody is depressed, and they've spent millions on this and developed all these tests, but what they found was most useful was when they asked the patient, are you depressed? And that in itself was just the easiest way and the most valid way to move a conversation forward. So we erred on the side of usefulness, although we did a lot of scientific testing to make it happen. And so in terms of what's next, you know, who knows? I let the market tell me a lot of these things. I mean, we are talking about a board game. We're also talking about extensions, so personality poker for investing. Like, what's your investment style? Are you a saver? Are you a spender? And really start to look at, well, how would you start making financial decisions? Or personality poker for dating and families. Mm-hmm. So those are in the future, but we're dealing with one thing at a time.
Well, I think you've come up with such a novel idea, and I think it just makes a great gift, number one. And I think, number two, what you're able to offer as a teacher, as an innovator, is very inspiring, too, because it's something that is out of the box, and I compliment you on it, Stephen. And I want, again, to let my listeners know, Personality Poker, it's available just about everywhere. Go to the website, personalitypoker.net. That's the right one, is it not?
That's correct, or personalitypokerbook.com. I mean, they go to the same place.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, somebody owns personalitypoker.com. It's a cyber squatter focused on gambling, so we obviously aren't that. In fact, I always say the only way you can lose a personality poker is if you don't have a personality.
Well, there may be a few of those floating around, but not very many, because everyone I've ever met has had a personality that is unique to them. Stephen Shapiro has been my guest. This wonderful item, it would be fabulous for that person that has everything, but they do need to play. So it's something, personality poker, it is a great conversation starter. And I think if you're in business, if you're a teacher, it would help with students. I just think there's so many different ways of being able to use it. So Personality Poker, Stephen M. Shapiro, it's the playing card tool for driving high performance, teamwork, and innovation in business, but also on other levels as well. Stephen, thank you so much for being my guest, and happy holidays to you.
Thanks, Donna. This was a lot of fun, and happy holidays to you.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Rio. I'm the author of the cutting-edge book, Hooked on Raw. I want to give you and your loved ones the gift of optimum health. So when you order my book, Hooked on Raw, which has over 350 delicious, healthy recipes, I'll include my new DVD, What's Not Cooking in Rio's Kitchen, for a half price. Just go to my website, rawfoodinfo.com, and click on Holiday Special. That's rawfoodinfo.com. Click on Holiday Special.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Here's the telephone number for you to call in if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. For a reading on the air, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Boy, are you busy with the holiday activities? Holy Joseph, I've got so much going on. I finally was able to get some baking done, and quick like a bunny, if you want to make up a batch of cookies that are really delicious, and you don't have to fool around with very much, let me just give you this quick suggestion, because I do it every year. It's become one of my husband's favorite cookies. And what I do is just take a straight sugar cookie recipe, and then I add to it a container of the candied fruit, whatever candied fruit you'd like. If you like the fruitcake mixture, you know, where it's in all different chunks, you have the lemon and the cherry and the pineapple and all that mixed in. And then I just mix it into the dough, bake my cookies, and then, well, take sometimes some chocolate and dribble over the top. But they're a moist cookie. They're just absolutely delicious. And the thing about them is if you put them in a can or a tin, the flavors marry. It's just absolutely wonderful. I had to share that with you because, again, it's one of my husband's favorites. So I fix it every year. But if you're like me, you're trying to figure out how you can get a little bit of this in, a little bit of that in. So I'm going to try to share some ideas and concepts with you for the holidays as we have the opportunity. My goodness. Only a few more days, and we're there. Oh, boy. How does it get here so fast? I don't know. Does it every year this way? Let's take our first caller today. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, Donna. It's Pat in Connecticut.
Well, hi, Pat.
How
are you doing?
Well, thank you.
Great. Pat, the first thing that I am looking at with you is that you have to actually say no to someone or something. I'm seeing you extending your left arm out. Your hand is open. The fingers are separated, and you're saying no. This has to stop here. No. So there's something or someone that you're not wanting to come into your space, or you're having to say you do not choose to accept a responsibility that maybe they're wanting to put on you. And this is not your common nature. Usually you would be the type to say, oh, sure, I'll be glad to help you out, da-da-da-da-da. But this is something that you're doing more of. You're saying no. You're pushing, you're making a point of being very specific. This is excellent. And you need to know there's no guilt here. There is no need to think, gee whiz, I wonder if I did the right thing, blah, 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 so on and so forth. Understand, it's okay to say no. Because if you don't do that, if you don't establish your boundaries, then you're just going to feel as if everything is starting to get cluttered again. And you have been diligently working at eliminating what you consider clutter in your space. And I think a lot of it is mental and emotional and physical. It's all, you know, all together. So be aware. It's okay. And hold true to your stance because it's a good thing to do. Do you have a question for me today?
That's great. I'll keep it in mind. Thank you. I am traveling for the first time in years, and I'm going to be with my family for the first time in years. So it's really big. And
wow.
I'm planning to have a, you know, really good attitude about it, but just I'm sure you have insight.
Well, you're going to be with them for the holiday?
Yes.
Oh, I think that's marvelous. Now, one of the things that you need to be aware of is that there's going to be an individual that just loves to dig up old stuff and old garbage. And what I want you to do is, and I think that's maybe affiliated with what I was looking at, you need to make it okay that you choose not to go down the road of the past. If they choose to tiptoe down or rock and roll down something of the past, that is not really what you want to even join them in. Just smile and say, hi, I'm going to go get myself a cup of coffee, or I'm going to go out and sit with the birds or something. You can get up and you can leave the environment, go into another room, or do something to get out of that. And you can also introduce another subject when you come back in. But remember, it's okay to separate from whatever is not acceptable to you. You don't have to compromise here. So go with a feeling of joy because I think you're going to be so pleased that you're actually there. But this individual I'm looking at, they remind me of a relative I used to have that would constantly, oh, my goodness, this person, they would things would come out of their mouth and you wondered how long they had held certain things in. And you go, keep a good sense of humor and just be okay. You're okay with who you are. And one person doesn't need to spoil it for everybody. Remember, you're an adult. You're not under somebody else's thumb. This is not the case anymore. So you have the right to choose to leave the conversational area and or go, you know, just say, oh, my goodness, I just thought of something. And you can interrupt and very gently shift the conversation.
Okay.
You'll have a great time.
I recite your words. The last thing you told me was, who's the boss? Who's the boss when my anxiety came over? And it really helped. So I will tell myself I am an adult. And thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a wonderful holiday with your family.
And thank you. And you too.
Thank you, dear. This
Thanks
is Donna
so much,
Siebel. Oh, thank you, hon. Merry Christmas to you too. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. You know, just in the exchange we had brought something to mind that I had received in an email just last Friday. And it is from a lady. Her name is Judith Bowman. Now, Judith has been a guest on my show, and she puts out a regular newsletter on manners and protocol. And this is a very gracious, gracious woman. But she had a newsletter that she put out. In fact, you can get a newsletter at protocolconsultants.com. And she said, I want to know what's happening to America. And I'm going to read it verbatim because I think it's worth listening to. She said, I just returned from my first cruise and I'm compelled to share this experience. Most of the crew were from countries such as South Africa, Ireland, India, Germany, France, England, and parts of Asia and other parts of the world as well. Every one of the service personnel were meticulously groomed, they had impeccable hygiene, and were well-dressed. They were gracious, they were happy, articulate, upbeat, engaging, conversational, professional, respectful, and courteous. Now, she said, whether or not these qualities are inherent in their chosen profession, or it's simply their nature, and actually they're trained to do this, she said, is immaterial. However, in her mind's view, it's vitally important. She said, conversely, And this is her observation. Interestingly, the 3,000-plus passengers were Americans, of which she is one herself. She said most of whom were ill-mannered, extremely overweight, horribly dressed, and rude. She said they had 800 of the 3,000, 850 children. And the children's behavior, she said, was exactly like the parents. She said they were ill-mannered, they were overweight, they were rude, they were destructive, and they were obnoxious. And she said the parents exercised little or no restraint with their out-of-control children. She said, I was pushed, shoved, and trampled as others overextended to grab food. People left food and debris everywhere, including corridors, walkways, and elevators. Expressionless children idly hung out in stairwells with boom boxes despite numerous structured activities available, and no one asked them to move. Do you get the picture? She said, what is happening to America? 3,000 people is a significant representation, and if those aboard this ship are any indication, Americans, how we look, fat and slovenly, how we conduct ourselves, and how we treat others is deplorable. Respect, pride in ourselves, and common courtesies have clearly gone by the wayside. When she put this in her newsletter, I thought, wow, this is so important. And I do public appearances, as you know, and I interact with the public on various levels, whether it's through the radio show or speaking engagements, appearances of different types. Now, I've seen many, many people in my travels who are courteous, who are not rude, and who take a positioning of responsibility when it comes to their children. But for some reason in our world today, there seems to be this attitude that we're not supposed to correct kids, and we're not supposed to correct adults. Well, how are kids going to learn if adults themselves are not willing to be self-disciplined? And I've said it before on my show, and I will say it right now, because I think Judith's comment is important. We all appreciate courtesy and good manners. As adults, I think it's our responsibility to demonstrate that. I think that is what we need to do. Saying thank you, please, showing patience, being disciplined. How can the younger person learn if the adults around them aren't doing it? And I think holding people accountable for their actions and behaviors is important. Now, in many ways, there's been a lot of people that have gotten along without having to do that. So the question is, how do we choose as adults to represent ourselves? How do we want to be seen? This is very important. Whether it's professional, whether it is just personal interaction in a grocery store, I can tell you that courtesy, thoughtful questioning, has gone a lot further than ranting and raving and being rude and obnoxious. It is something that I think we need to recognize as individuals first, because it's only with the action of the individual that the other things change. And whether we're a teacher or professional on any level, I think we need to keep in mind that we are responsible for the image that we give. And if you want to have good representation of yourself, then be it. Let your standards be who you are. Demonstrate them in whatever you do. And you're going to find that things will work out. But I thought Judith's newsletter was a significant one, because I have seen environments and places where people have been slovenly, where they have not had a sense of pride or self-respect, or they felt that it was their right just to run and railroad over anybody that might be in their environment. We don't have to put up with that. That is not a requirement. But it takes conscious application and expectation before people will demonstrate what they should demonstrate. And it's all in the learning curve. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break for a minute, and then we'll be coming back. And I have got a Christmas story to share with you, and also a little bit of this and a little bit of that. But more than anything, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, 888-815-9494. 9756 is the telephone number to call into. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com. Each week, we interview guests and cover topics you won't hear on mainstream radio. Get informed, healthy, and involved. rawenergyradio.com.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Now, we're going to be talking about some special things for Christmas, but what I wanted to do was just make a couple of suggestions. You know, there are many groups, and I mentioned this the other day, there are different groups that offer special things around the holidays, and I thought I would share some of these other items with you because they just are amazing to me. In fact, if you have really been keeping track of a lot of the activity that's been going on in the Gulf, you know, the big oil spill that we had there, there is a project, if you would like to do something during the holidays for someone maybe that would love a bracelet, then there is a project. You can, it's called Be the One. It's a turquoise bee charm bracelet, and it's been done by Julia Faley. And every penny of this $50 purchase price goes to the National Wildlife Foundation to help their efforts to restore the Gulf. I think this is just incredible. Now, if you want to find out more about this special bracelet, you can go to juliafaley.com, and that's J-U-L-I-A-F-A-I-L-E-Y. Also, here's another option. If you like helping children, this is something you can do. There is a piece of jewelry called the Resilient Heart Necklace, or the Radiant Star Bracelet, and it's $30. It's from Things Remembered, or a heart-shaped jewelry box you can get for $20, and $2 goes to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Now, all of them can be engraved, and believe it or not, they are available in some stores, or you can go to thingsremembered.com. thingsremembered.com. Also, if you'd like to help out the military, there is a Love All Around necklace, and it's so cute. It's got little hearts on it. Now, this necklace is $100, and $50 of that goes to Fisher House, which provides free housing to families of injured soldiers so that they can stay close while their soldier hero is receiving medical treatment. Now, this is where you go to find out about that. EmilyElizabethJewelry.com. That's E-M-I-L-Y, ElizabethJewelry.com. So there's just, you know, a couple of items if you like to give special gifts. And, you know, there's my friend Mary Ellen, she always gets some of the best stories. I just absolutely am amazed at the people's paths that she crosses. And this is a story that she got from Phyllis Driggers. And Phyllis works with handicapped and terminally ill children. And every year at Christmas, she and the teacher's assistant that works with her takes all of these children to their local mall to visit with Santa. And this particular holiday season, She said, we arrived in our local mall around 10 a.m. However, when we got there and we unloaded, all of the children were inside the mall, we found out Santa wasn't due to arrive for about another hour. Well, you can imagine, if you have about 30 kids, they are just all gaga at being at the mall, and they were just having a wonderful time. Well, they decided to take the children into FAO Schwartz, which they had originally planned to do after seeing Santa. And she said, if you've ever taken a group of handicapped children into a toy store for an hour, you can just imagine what it was like. What are you doing? Just like you do with any other batch of kids, telling them not to touch things, be careful. Oh, I'm so sorry you got bumped into by the wheelchair. Well, at just about, 40 minutes after being in FAO Schwartz, they started taking the children out of the store and lining them up to see Santa. And she said it was just wonderful. The man that was doing Santa was just absolutely awesome. He was the same gentleman every year who has been so patient and kind with these children that they bring in. And, of course, she was taking a picture of every one of the children as they got on to Santa's lap. And her assistant ends up coming out of FAO Schwartz in tears. You know, they had started the stuff, and she's just crying. And, of course, she thought, oh, my goodness, something's happened to one of our kids. But what she found out is that it was a Christmas miracle. Apparently, there was a man who was in the FAO Schwartz store, and he had been watching these two women with all of these children. And what this man did, he went up to the manager of the store, and he said, here's $500. I want you to be sure that these teachers are able to buy whatever they want for these children. Well, the assistant to Phyllis went back to thank the person, and Phyllis was still taking pictures of all the kids in line. She said she found it was hard to focus because her tears, every time she was thinking about what this man did, she just started to cry. Well, the staff at the toy store, they said, were just fabulous. They took that $500. They bought games, books, puzzles, all kinds of toys. And then the manager of the store asked if they could use the Brio train set that they had kept set up for the holidays. It seems this train set was obsolete because they were coming out with a new one for display. Phyllis said the manager not only gave us the display, but all of the trains and special accessories to go with it. They got everything. One of the children wanted a little aquarium that cost $40. They only charged them $20. The manager then gave me his card and said we should call him the following year in September. They wanted to do a fundraiser for the children. The assistant manager was even going to come out to their school and show the children how to use the music keyboard and floor keyboard like the one in the movie Big. Phyllis said, I was so overwhelmed by the kindness and generosity for so many people. One of my children looked at me and said, it's just like being touched by an angel. That was their Christmas miracle. Phyllis said, I couldn't agree more. Well, we're out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow we have got a great guest. We're going to be talking about the power of adversity. You're feeling tough times. Hey, we're going to have some suggestions for you. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. I look forward to having you join me tomorrow. Same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.